If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Wintrust Business Lunch. Was it with Bob Surratt, Terry Savage, that I heard you say you don't have to worry about the banking system? You've got other things to worry about. It does seem to get a lot of attention, but was that the one thing you said that shouldn't be on your list of financial concerns?
Well, if you're under the insured deposit limit, you shouldn't be worried. But the banks themselves have some problems. I heard someone put this way, and I think this is the best explanation. You remember all... was it 2 years ago? We talked a lot about, please refinance your mortgage now. Mm-hmm. You can get a 3% mortgage. We did all that talking about that, and a lot of our smart listeners did that. And then it was last summer, only, 9 months ago, that I started talking about, why are you only earning 1.5% on your bank CDs? Go buy treasury bills. They were 4% at the time. And when everybody went running, all of our listeners, and today you can get 5% on 6-month treasury bills or 3-month T-bills. Now, look what's happened to the banks. They have a lot of loans and assets, some of them really good assets. Your mortgage, you're never going to default on it. You won't even sell your house because you want to keep that 3% mortgage. So they're going to get paid on that mortgage. It's a good mortgage. The house has gone up probably in value. They might have had long-term treasuries themselves that they put the depositors' money in at 2.5% and 3%. But now they have to pay 4%, 4.5%, 5%, some of them, to compete with what you can get in a money market or in treasury bills. So there's a crunch at the banks. Nobody ever cared about it until someone said, hey, look, yeah, they're not going to sell your mortgage. I mean, it's underwater. They're not going to sell these treasuries. Nobody wants old 10-year treasury notes that only yield 2%, which was a great deal a couple of years ago for them to buy. Mm. But they're worth less than face value. And there's a gap there. And that's the fear around regional banks. So you don't have to be worried about your deposits, but the banks themselves and the shareholders of the banks are saying, I don't want that. I definitely don't want that. So the problem is that the stocks of the regional banks are down and the banks themselves are cutting back on credit.
Banks themselves are cutting back on credit.
Oh, sure.
They're the ones
that lend to small businesses. Yeah. They're getting nervous and that spreads through the economy. Now, that's not the only thing out there. I mean, this is a wicked Wednesday because we also have the Fed chairman speaking. It's pretty much assured. It would be a wild surprise if he said, we're a little bit worried about this credit tightening because of the failure of two big banks and because of the stock falling in all these regional banks. So we won't raise rates. They're not going to say that. They'll raise it a quarter because they're still fighting inflation. But the question is, will they say, but this is it? We'll be about done now, or what will the Fed chairman say? That's the first thing that you got to think about. And the second issue out there is the debt ceiling, which is huge. We can't default on our debt. We can't stop paying Social Security or our military service people their paychecks. So that's coming to a head in the next 30 days. Well, that's enough reason for the stock market to kind of go, oops. You asked me if this is a trouble. I mean, what is there really trouble happening?
With the debt ceiling.
You don't have to take my word for it. The one market that I always look at to see whether there's an extreme of something happening, and it hasn't done anything in years practically, is the gold market. And today the June gold futures are at $2,033, up $10 an ounce. The all-time high was in August of 2020, pandemic time, end of the world time, when gold went to 2075. If you keep an eye on the gold market, it's telling you that there are some serious issues in credit granting from the banks into businesses, which could slow the economy, the Fed exacerbating it because it's still fighting inflation, raising rates, and this whole debt ceiling thing lingering. So, we're in very interesting times. Yeah.
Interesting times, but I thought you were going to conclude, though, that the gold market is telling us that the Congress won't be so foolish as to shoot ourselves in the foot here.
And the gold market is saying maybe you want to hedge your bets on the stupidity of Congress.
And then what does a money manager or an individual do about that?
You know, we ride this out because as I've said, as you said many times, we're not going to default on our debt. There's some new arguments around that the 14th Amendment actually prohibits defaulting on our debt, but it would still cause all kinds of dislocations if they don't lift the debt ceiling, because the payment system, let's not even get into that. I know there are questions. The point is, we're going to have to all ride this out. Nobody's going to get out ahead of anybody. You might hedge your bets a little by having gold. You're glad you've got some chicken money and T-bills yielding 5%. And the stock market could take a hit if we do have the recession caused by a crunch here.
I should have bought that gold a long time ago. I mean, it's
I've never sold any gold I ever bought, and I started buying it at $65 an ounce.
Well, do you think $2,000 is a little pricey?
No, I actually think gold will go significantly higher over the long run.
Let's pick up a phone line or two. 312-981-7200 for Terry Savage. We'll start with Rhonda. You can call or text. We've got Terry for about 5 minutes. Rhonda, you're on WGM. What can we do for you?
Yes, I have a question about what to do with a small life insurance policy that I was the beneficiary of. It's just $30,000. But I have two preschool grandchildren. I'd like to do something with this money for them. Since it's not a lot of money divided by two, obviously, I'm wondering what Terry would suggest the best thing to do with that money is.
All right. That's a very generous gift as a grandma. You've paid off all your high interest credit card debt, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. All right. Then you're in good shape. You live in Illinois?
Yes.
Go to brightstart.com, brightstart.com. It's the Illinois 529 College Savings Plan. Open an account for each of them. You can be the custodian. You can name one of the parents as custodian. And you could put $15,000 in for little Susie and $15,000 in an account for Jimmy. And then tell the parents that they should also be, on birthdays, adding some money to this account.
Okay. The other question is, the preschoolers, actually, I live in Illinois. They do not. They live in another state. So does that matter?
That's okay.
Should I still do Bright Start?
Yes, sure. Because Bright Start's a highly rated plan. You'll get a deduction for up to $10,000 of your contribution on your Illinois income tax. So you can make $10,000 in this year, maybe another $5,000 next year, whatever. But the fact is, it's a very highly rated plan, and they can use it for money in any school in any state. It doesn't matter.
That's good to know. Rhonda, I hope that helps. Terry, how does that perform? What's the return on that?
Well, you have to make some decisions. And the easiest decision to make in an opening a 529 account is to let them make the decisions by saying, I'm investing for a 3-year-old or a 5-year-old. And they have age-based investing. As you get closer to the college years, you want to look at it and say, let's be a little more conservative maybe even than they are.
But is it in the market? Is it in equities?
Oh, it's in equities. It's in a combination of conservative things and equities, more aggressive for younger children who have a longer time horizon. That's why you buy the age-based
plan. Is it conceivable that you'd lose money like on any other investment?
It's absolutely conceivable. And while we're talking about this, if you have a 529 plan now and you have a high school junior, go take a look at how it's invested. You've probably built up some money over the years. If you've been in there 10 years, we had an incredible bull market. Now look at the most conservative option. You're going to be needing the money in a year or two.
Thanks for the call, Rhonda. 708 said, hey, Terry Savage, what percent of my portfolio should be in gold? 20%? Thanks.
Well, if you had bought it like 3 years ago or 5 years ago at, $1,300 an ounce, you would have loved to have had 20% in there. But the fact is, gold is just sort of like an insurance policy, a hedge against not only inflation, which it didn't really jump on that, but global turmoil. So whatever lets you sleep at night. Usually have more chicken money than gold, for sure.
630 said,
on the stage of life.
Ask Terry Savage if a gold ETF is as good as buying gold coins.
Yes, it is. The ETF most often traded on the used on the New York Stock Exchange is called GLD. That's the symbol GLD. It invests in gold bullion. So if you wanted to buy gold in an easy way, you could just go in your 401k account. If you have a brokerage option or your IRA, you could buy that New York Stock Exchange ETF, GLD.
One last quick question. Is it still worth it to continue buying bonds each year, given that interest rates keep getting lower?
We're talking about savings bonds. Savings bonds came out with a new thing. The rates are up dramatically, but the base rate now is 0.9%. If the Fed doesn't get inflation under control, future inflation adjustments can make that higher base rate very attractive. But they are certainly less attractive than they were a year ago at this time when you could get over 9.5%.
By the way, this from the ChicagoBusiness.com site. Cook County Assessor Fritz Kagi has thrown a haymaker punch at the Chicago Bears as they ponder whether to proceed with plans to build a stadium complex in Arlington Heights, moving to raise sixfold the property tax value of the land involved even before any construction occurs. The move is being appealed to the Cook County Board of Review. That's a three-person panel that can overrule Kagi's decision. But if the assessment is upheld, it would cost the team roughly an additional $15 million a year in property taxes. That's a very steep price the NFL franchise would have to pay while it decides whether to develop the former Arlington International Racecourse property. Kagi's move came earlier this year as part of the triennial reassessment of real estate in the north and west suburbs. The reassessment is for tax year 2022, but will carry forward for future years. Kagi concluded the property was worth not the $33.5 million that the 2022 owner Churchill Downs taxes were based on, but that property is worth $197 million, not $33 million, but $197 million, almost exactly the $197.2 million the Bears paid for the property in February. Which seems logical. Assuming property taxes rise by the same proportion, then the bill for the property would go from $2.75 million to an estimated $16.5 million. The Bears are not happy with the decision, which would exact a big price for any development delay. I don't know, does that sound like a lot of money to you? It would seem to me like the kind of money we're talking about for a franchise, its value or the cost of a stadium, $15 million in property taxes, is not the largest number you're going to see associated with this story. But back to that one paragraph, Kagi concluded that the property was worth not $33.5 million, but rather almost exactly the amount that the team paid for the property, $197 million. Assuming property taxes rise by the same proportion, the bill for the property would go from $2.75 million to an estimated $16.5 million. They reassess the property every 3 years. How many of you have been in that situation where you hope that when they come to reassess your property, they don't notice that you did a bump out, or you have a swimming pool, or you got rid of the swimming pool? A lot of folks hope that the assessor doesn't notice, and good Lord, don't let them in your house. Not exactly sure how that sort of thing happens. And then one other quick financial note here. This is from Channel 7. Several workers on Paul Vallis's Chicago mayoral campaign say they have not been paid for their work, showing off copies of checks they said bounced. The men had a message for Paul Vallis: we were the backbone of your campaign, so please pay us the money you owe us because we were out there spreading your name, said Jacob Maligon, a West Lawn resident. The worker said the former candidate's campaign hired them to knock on doors and get out the vote, but 3 weeks after Election Day, they said they are still owed hundreds of dollars out there just trying to get people out there to vote, and we were promised the money, and we have no money, said Phil Gouraud, a Brighton Park resident. As a matter of fact, today we were told to come out Wednesday evening at 5 o'clock, and nobody's in the office, said Raul Montez Jr. The complaints come days after Vallis's campaign filed a lawsuit against political consultant, and I'm not going to pronounce this name correctly, it looks like Chimobe Enya, claiming that he was paid nearly $700,000 by the campaign to coordinate get-out-the-vote efforts in black neighborhoods, including removing MAGA lawn signs that caused controversy the days before the election. The Vallis campaign alleges that he did little or no work. He denies it. Now he's threatening to countersue. Incidentally, somebody just texted in, hey, John Williams, of course the Bears should pay taxes based on the sale price, right? It would for us. Yeah, I don't exactly understand how, while you might not like it, it's not unfair to say, if you think the property is worth $197 million, then why don't we tax you at a rate commensurate with that? 773, this is a political move to keep the Bears at Soldier Field. I don't know if Fritz Kagi has a dog in that hunt. Certainly, the current mayor is no longer the decider on a lot of these sorts of things. Brandon Johnson did say, remember, in the campaign, that he's not giving up on keeping the Bears in Chicago. His line was great, right? He said, I was one of 10 kids in a house with one bathroom. I know how to negotiate. And he thinks that maybe he can persuade the Bears to stay in Chicago. Did he whisper into Fritz Kagi's ear? I doubt it. Right, let's get you more business news now on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago's still the top spot in the country for commercial real estate investment. That's according to new data and ranking by Site Selection magazine. Despite the loss of Boeing and Caterpillar, Chicago broke its own record for luring corporate relocations and expansions last year. The city's been the country's top draw for investment for 10 years in a row. Chicago outpaced Dallas, Houston, and New York. Some of the big relocations and expansions include Google, Kellogg's, and Mars. In the suburbs, Canadian Electric truck and bus maker Lion Electric opened a large plant in Joliet, and Ace Hardware signed a headquarters lease for the former McDonald's property in Oak Brook. State Farm is raising homeowners insurance rates in Illinois. The 2.4% average increase will take effect May 15th. The increase will add about $25 to the average annual policy. State Farm has already raised auto rates twice this year so far. Those increases will add about $114 to the average annual auto policy. The Bloomington-based company has about 35% of the homeowners market in Illinois. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yep, thank you. And because it's been mentioned so much in connection to Monday's dirt storm tragedy on I-55, we are going to learn a bit about no-till farming today. After I tell you, we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, no-till farming. Helping us out is
Chase Brown. I'm a sixth-generation farmer in Macon County, just west of Decatur. On top of farming, I run a cover crop seed business as well.
Educate us, Chase. What is no-till farming?
No-till can be interpreted a lot of different ways, but the big picture of it is we are going to do as little as possible. We aren't going to go out there with tillage tools and work the ground and turn it over. We're just going to leave it with a lot of residue on top of it and minimum disturbance to it.
And what are the benefits?
The biggest one is probably holding your soil in place, holding soil moisture. Every time we open that soil up, we're going to lose moisture. We're also going to lose carbon, the basis of all life in the soil. We want to protect it. So by keeping residue on top of it, it gives it a wonderful habitat for all the living organisms and everything in our soils to help grow a successful crop.
Why wouldn't every farmer do no-till?
Oftentimes, farmers struggle with adoption because they just can't put that dollar amount on it. To me, seeing your very valuable asset, your land, blowing away to the neighbors, that's a big financial loss. That's my asset, and it is blowing away to my neighbors. So that cover crop is holding that in place. It shows me value.
A big thank you to our ag teacher today, Chase Brown, who farms near Decatur. He'll tell us about other ways to keep soil from blowing away, such as cover crops and strip tilling, on another day. Meanwhile, you can see what he's up to on Facebook.
Brown Seed Sales is the best way to find me. We try to show folks kind of what we're doing and what we believe in conservation farming.
On the food calendar today, it's Illinois Bacon Day. It's National Raspberry Popover Day, National Chocolate Custard Day, and National Garden Meditation Day. I'm Steve Alexander, and that's the business of food on 720 WGN.
The Chicago Firehouse Restaurant is honoring firefighters on National Firefighters Day, and that's going to be on the 4th. National Firefighters Day is May 4th, and it'll be a poignant one in Chicago, considering the fact that we've buried a couple of firefighters in the last couple of weeks. Chicago Firehouse Restaurant on South Chicago, formerly the Engine Company House 104, constructed in 1905, will be honoring 104 Chicago firefighters with a special breakfast and a presentation of a hand-painted canvas from the children of Old St. Mary's School. That'll be from 5 p.m. It says here from 5 a.m. Not sure what that is, to 10 a.m. Anyway, it's going to be... Go ahead, Steve.
Is that the one on South Michigan Avenue?
Yes. And okay. I've eaten there a couple of times, inside and out. They got a little deck in the back, and it's just a very neat room. And I'm happy to see a restaurant like that succeed on that part of town. Mm-hmm. It's 12:49 now. Okay, so now we do have our guest. Let's visit for a couple of seconds then with Shannon Tauschman. Shannon, this is John Williams, and you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm good, John. How are you doing?
Good. You're talking to a couple of fans of the Chicago Firehouse Restaurant. You're the general manager there, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So as I was just mentioning, that's in an old firehouse, right?
It is a 1905 firehouse built for mainly the families of Prairie Avenue.
I don't know what that means, built mainly for the families of Prairie Avenue. That's the area it serves?
Right, exactly. So these would be like your founding families of Chicago, like your movers and shakers at the turn of the century. So your Marshall Fields family, your John Shedd, your George Pullman. So, of course, if you had a beautiful mansion on Prairie Avenue and the memory of the great Chicago fire was still rumbling around in your head, you'd want to make sure there was a fire station very close by your house.
So when was it decommissioned then?
1987.
And did it sit idle for a while, or did it immediately become something else?
No, it was used for storage a lot with the city. Then when Ron Howard was filming Backdraft, he used the fire station in one scene.
Oh.
And then it became a restaurant in 2000.
Boy, I remember that movie. That was all the rage. It was a really good movie, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. A classic movie.
So then you all bought it and turned it into a restaurant, and it still has some of the features or feel of a firehouse, right?
Oh, definitely. It has, of course, the brass pole. Everybody always wants to look for the brass pole. When you walk into the restaurant, the first thing you're going to notice are going to be the two major door frames that were, later on fire engines, but originally they were, of course, horse-drawn trucks.
Talk to me just a little bit about the menu. So now that you're up and running there as the Chicago Firehouse Restaurant, it's American food, right? Steaks, fish, that sort of thing?
Well, we like to call ourselves a landmark steakhouse because we are a landmark. And we do serve a variety of different steaks. But again, being a neighborhood restaurant, we also have a variety of different salads, a variety of different sandwiches, just a little bit of everything, you know, for everyone.
So on May 4th, then, you're doing this event to honor the fallen firefighters. Tell me what you're going to do on the 4th.
So tomorrow we're going to be throwing a brunch for 104 firefighters. We are Engine 104, so we thought that was appropriate to invite 104 firefighters to come to the restaurant, listen to a live band, have a great buffet set up for them to honor them, as well as a huge balloon installation.
So this isn't open to the public from 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. It's breakfast or brunch for the guys and gals that morning, huh?
Correct. So they serve us, so the least we can do is serve them.
Yeah, no kidding. Do you guys normally do a brunch there, by the way? Are you guys open morning, noon, and night, or what are the hours?
No, we are dinner service Tuesday through Saturday. We do brunches when it's like a big occasion, like Easter or Mother's Day. And then, of course, on certain Mondays or Sundays, we will open up if there's a large convention in town, just because we are so conveniently located to McCormick Place.
Yeah. I go by it all the time when I go to the DePaul games, heading down on Michigan Avenue there. It's Michigan Avenue. No, you're on technically it's South Chicago, right?
No, we are actually 1401 South Michigan Avenue.
South Michigan Avenue. And how's business? How has staffing been? Any restaurant in town these days is probably struggling against some of the same things. Not so many folks downtown and staffing issues. How are you all managing?
We are finally, I think, getting our staffing pars where we want them. But it's been a struggle. I think every restaurant... the industry's just been impacted so much, but But we feel good this year as far as being able to open up completely, because we do have two outdoor spaces. Last year, we could only open up the one space like 8 or 9 times, just due to the fact that we just didn't have the staff for it. But we feel very good this year about doing it.
The one I recall eating at is in the back, right? It's kind of a patio. Do I remember that correctly?
We have a patio out straight in the back, and then above it, we do have a veranda.
Oh, is that open too now?
That will be open, correct.
And so, while you have this sort of steakhouse vibe, are there some signature cocktails? You mentioned that some of the salads are concocted to sort of reflect the neighborhood. Just talk a little bit about that.
Well, as far as our cocktail, no one can really beat our old-fashioned. It's our CFH old-fashioned made with Michter's bourbon. That is by far our number one seller. That actually is toe-to-toe with our most popular menu item, which is actually our lobster bisque. So I think last year we sold like 5,100 Manhattan or old-fashioneds to like, I think, 5,102 lobster bisques. So those are sort of our staples that people really look forward to when they come to our restaurant. But again, being a neighborhood restaurant, we can't really rely on the guy next door to have a Delmonico every single day. So he might have a Delmonico on a Saturday, but then he might pop in on Tuesday and have a buffalo chicken sandwich, or come in on Thursday and have a Caesar salad.
It's nice of you to recognize the firefighters, the Chicago Firehouse Restaurant. It's at 1401 South Michigan Avenue. Been there a couple of times. I love that room. It's nice and airy. The patio in back is nice. I'll have to get upstairs sometimes, too. But nice to talk to you today. Thanks for giving us the lowdown.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Shannon Toshman is the general manager at the Chicago Firehouse. Again, that's 1401 South Michigan Avenue.